Thank you for listening to Alt Latino. Now, I want to take a moment and talk to you about another podcast that is really cool, StoryCorps. It travels the country collecting the stories of everyday people. And the podcast showcases these unscripted stories about real life. Find the StoryCorps podcast now. It's at npr.org/podcasts. I'm Jasmine Garst. Felix Contreras is away, so today I'm hanging out with one of my favorite interns here at NPR, Rigoberto Hernandez, who just happens to be a huge fan of Morrissey.
You is can't that right? see me right now, but I'm crying.
Why are we talking about Morrissey today? Because this week is Cinco de Mayo, and here on Alt Latino, it's Cinco de Morrissey. The British icon is also a huge figure for Mexicans on both sides of the border. He's a legendary figure, but don't take my word for it. Alejandro Hernandez is in a Morrissey tribute band called Mariachi Manchester. He's here in D.C. with us. Hola, Alejandro.
Hola, hola. Saludos.
And Dr. Melissa Hidalgo is an assistant professor of English and world literature. She sometimes also gives lectures on Morrissey at Claremont College. And Dr. Hidalgo, you are in Dublin attending a Morrissey event, right?
Yes, I am. Actually, I was at a conference at the University of Limerick where I gave a keynote talk on Morrissey and Mexicans, Chicanos, and Los Angeles in particular.
That's really interesting. And before we hear more about that, I want to let our listeners know that we are listening to Mexrissey. It's a Morrissey tribute band started by some of Mexico's biggest current musicians, including Camilo Lara, Ceci Bastida, and Sergio Mendoza. And this song is called Ask. I just want to point out that Felix is out today, but he left me very well accompanied with three Mexican-Americans. And so I want to ask you guys, how huge is Morrissey? Would it be fair to say he's like the Mexican Elvis?
Well, we already have a Mexican Elvis. He's called Elvis.
Elvis. Yes.
But how big is he?
He's the Mexican Morrissey.
Yeah. Morrissey is super important, especially in like Los Angeles, Chicana, Chicano, Latino culture. And I say Latino because there's also Central Americans in the mix there. So I got to give them some love.
Rigo, are you wiping your tears of joy?
I'm holding the Bible, Morrissey's autobiography right now. But yeah, I grew up listening to a bunch of emo music, and then Morrissey came around. And as it turns out, he kind of embodied all the messages that emo bands can play, and he put him in a perfect poetry song.
Melissa, do you remember when you first fell in love with Morrissey?
1991, I can pinpoint it. It was my junior year of high school. My family had moved from Montebello, California, which is where I was born, a community east of LA. And they moved us to a place further east in Whittier, but we ended up going to school in La Habra, which is just over the Orange County borderline. And not a lot of Latinos at that school in the early 1990s. It's changed a lot now, but I was in a British literature course with maybe one other Latina. And it was one of these things that, you know, it might have come up in the study of Oscar Wilde, because for me it was very much a literary connection. And one of my friends who was in the drama club, the one other Latina in the class, showed me, hey, there's this singer I know, and he sings about Oscar Wilde. And at the time, it was Cemetery Gates, which is on The Queen is Dead. I mean, the music drew me in, but the lyrics is what drew me in. And I was hooked from that point on. And at that point in 1991, Morrissey was already a solo artist.
He was no longer with the Smiths.
No, he was solo. And 91 was pretty huge in L.A. because it was also the same year that He made his U.S. debut on television with the Johnny Carson show that year in 1991. He played his first show at the Forum at the time. And once I became hooked, I kind of just dove in and I got lost. And I don't think I've ever come up for air since then.
And Alejandro, how about you? When did you fall in love with Morrissey?
Oh, I fell in love with Morrissey through falling in love. But first, it was the first time I heard "The More You Ignore Me, The Closer I Get." And Morrissey, of course, was already solo. It was roughly 1995 or so. And I remember seeing when MTV had these world premiere videos, and those were a big deal to me. And there was one with Morrissey, and Morrissey was just so different. And so I heard "The More You Ignore Me, The Closer I Get," and it was just a very different, you know, example of masculinity to me that drew me in. The melodicness to it was amazing. And then fast forward a few years later, many years later, I was writing on Facebook. I wrote, "And if a double-decker bus crashes into us," and then someone else wrote in, "To Die by Your Side is such a heavenly way to die." And that person became my girlfriend. And so...
That's awesome.
So I just noticed last week in preparing for this, I thought, like, several of the women I've dated have loved Morrissey.
The Morrissey love connection. Alejandro, let's hear that song right now. It's called "There Is a Light That Never Goes Out." It's from 1986, when Morrissey was still with the Smiths.
Take me out tonight, where there's music and there's people and the young and the light. Driving in your car, I haven't got one anymore. Take me out tonight, because I want to see people and I want to see life. Driving in your car, oh please don't drop me home, because it's not my home, their home, and I'm welcome no more. And if a double-decker bus crashes into us, to die by your side is such a heavenly way to die. And if a ten-ton truck kills the both of us, strange fear gripped me and I just couldn't ask. Take me out tonight, oh take me anywhere, don't care, don't care, don't care. Driving in your car, I never, never want to go home, because I haven't got one. Kill for both of us.
So Melissa, is there like a whole like just a little bit of a dark sense of humor, you know, a guide seeing like, oh, if a double-decker bus crashes into us, I'll die happily?
Absolutely. It's I think the epitome of unrequited love, which a lot of people feel. And yes, the morbidity. And that's also, I think, what attracts a lot of Latinos and Mexicans. I think, you know, when we have holidays like Dia de los Muertos and we celebrate death, you know, this is it's a happy line almost. You know, it's not a sad thing to die by your side if a double-decker bus, because I'm going to be happy if I'm next to you, you know, and I'd rather go out that way than any other way. And I've always sort of thought about that every time I hear the song, and it's an anthem.
Yeah.
But also, you know, Melissa, it just kind of makes me think a little bit of like rancheras, you know, and like the tradition of the rancheras, you know, typical Mexican songs, especially from the north of Mexico.
Absolutely.
They are so lovesick and tragic that for the non-Mexican, the first time you hear it, it's like, what?
it's the kind of songs that make like it's the songs that make a macho man cry.
Right? No, Rigo, you know, I talked to you a lot about Morrissey, and you mentioned one song that you love, which is Irish Blood, English Heart.
Right. So if you listen to lyrics, it's like, I am dreaming of a time when to be English, isn't that something to be baneful? And it's like, so Morrissey was of Irish descent. His parents are from Ireland, but he's from England. And so in that song, he talks about this duality of like not being from one place to another. And I think that a lot of Latinos, or specifically Mexican-Americans, will tell you that, hey, that sounds a lot like us.
Irish blood, English heart, this I'm made of. There is no one on earth I'm afraid of. And no regime can buy or sell me. I've been dreaming of
An anecdote, yes. I remember going on a hike with my cousins, Rosy and Nora. They're from East LA, born and raised. And this is maybe early 2000s. And they go and watch Morrissey shows every single year whenever he's performing in LA. And they showed me the song, Irish Blood, English Heart. And my cousin was trying to explain to me why so many Chicanas and Chicanos, Latinos are into Morrissey and the Smiths. And she's like, check it out. It's kind of like he's talking about our experience and like a bicultural experience. And I think when I look at it too, it's also that sense of perhaps some of us have that feeling of belonging nowhere. Like we don't have a specific nationality in a sense. And so that song and other songs of being an outsider, I think, really, really captures a sentiment of what a lot of us go through.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We try here on Alt Latino to not put all Latinos in the same bag, which is something that a lot of media does, you know? And mm-hmm. there is something really unique to the Mexican-American experience because it's so close. But I always get the sense, just from talking to Rigo and to Felix, that it's a lot more punctuated in Mexican-Americans. Like, you can see home just, you know, from a high-rise building, which is something, you know, the South Americans don't, we don't have that. Recently, a friend of mine from Oaxaca, he was writing to me, and his girlfriend just moved in with him from the U.S. She's from the U.S. And he's, like, writing to me really upset because they had a fight the other night. And I'm like, so did you talk to her? I mean, did you just, like, after this fight? And he's like, no, man, I just stayed out all night and listened to Morrissey and rancheras and I had tequila. And now I'm really crudo and I don't know what to do. And I was like, that never solves anything.
Right. That was his ranchera.
So next up,
but you know, like,
yeah, no, tell me,
you know, speaking of like the songs that make men cry, you know, Morrissey has actually been asked about his Mexican American fans, and he, funny enough, he gave this interview to he never gives interviews, first of all. Morrissey is very elusive,
very elusive.
But he gave an interview to Telemundo out of all networks.
I think Latinos are full of emotion always, and whether it's tears or laughter, they're ready to explode, and they want to share their emotions, and they want to give and show and show and show. And so I think that's the connection, because when I sing, it's very expressive. So many people make music but tell you nothing about themselves, and it's very regimented. And I think it's important to be as open as possible. Give the heart. All of this is temporary.
So the other day, Rigo sends me this email. It's really funny. And he sends me this email saying, God, why are Latinos so emo? It's like a stereotype, but there's a lot of evidence to support it.
Jeez. Oh, my God. You know, and on one end, it does sound stereotypic to me, because I think all people around the world are emo in their own ways and have their own ways of expressing it. Maybe some things have some cultural differences.
Sure.
And I think that it's also a way to just give a quick marketing kind of connection to
absolutely.
To the whole audience. I think if it was an interview, I don't know, with a reliable news source in Los Angeles or somewhere, I think we can get into deeper things, like exactly like what we're talking about right now, right here on this show. There's much more to the story, much more to the songs that I think create a deeper connection to between all of us and his music.
And I think, you know, it is obviously a stereotype and we're joking. It's just kind of like one of those jokes you can make among Latinos, but then right. when someone else makes it, it's like, hey, watch yourself.
Not cool. Not cool, homie.
But I will say, a second anecdote is, I was living in Mexico when Morrissey famously canceled his show.
Oh, no.
And it was like a national day of mourning. It was like an international scandal. Like, a lot of, like, did he die?
They waved the flag down at, like, midway.
Half mast. Let's take a little breather. This next song is called This Charming Man. It's by The Smiths.
Punctured bicycle on a hillside desolate. Jumped up country boy who never knew his place. He said,
You were telling me that you think this is like the best of the Smiths. Why?
So basically this combines everything that's beautiful about the Smiths. Like you have the Johnny Marr pop sensibilities in the guitar riff. And then you have the poetic lyrics that is like classic Morrissey. And also like if you listen to the lyrics, it's a man being charmed by another man. I don't know.
Let's talk about this. Let's talk about Morrissey's sexuality. Because it was like his whole thing is that he's asexual, right? Melissa, tell me a little bit more about Morrissey's sexuality and how it fits into, you know, the landscape, a media landscape that Latin media presents a version of what it means to be a Latin man.
Right. So part of what I mentioned in the lecture is that Morrissey is often compared to someone like Juan Gabriel.
Juan Gabriel, one of the most famous pop and mariachi artists out of Mexico.
They're both very famous for evading questions of their sexuality, even though it's sort of out there and understood, right? Particularly with their male fans, that there is this idea of an alternative masculinity, right? So on the one hand, you have this very, you know, strapping, handsome, guapo man with a beautiful pompadour and perfect sideburns and piercing blue eyes, and he's perfectly dressed and all of these things, and he's attractive to a lot of people, you know. And I think that is a huge thing, is that it's sort of getting to go see Morrissey, and especially if you're a guy and if you're a straight man or, you know, heterosexual and you want to be with women, but it's okay to sort of lose yourself over Morrissey. And I think what I like about Morrissey, or what I've noticed, not as a male-bodied person, as a masculine person, though, a butch is how I identify. But what I love watching the guys, because they lose it. And it's sort of Morrissey in his embodiment of sexuality and a sort of more of a fluid ambiguity creates space for these kinds of expressions and these connections. And he, you know, more recently, he comes out as saying something like, I am homosexual, right? But what's interesting about his autobiography and the one that perhaps Rigoberto is clutching right now, I don't know what version he's clutching. You know, everyone was waiting, you know, when that came out, myself included, is he going to talk about, you know, his relationships and with who? And he talks about a relationship with a woman that seemed to be very domestic and sort of platonic. And then he speaks about a relationship with a man.
So one thing that I've noticed ever since I started coming out to the Morrissey and Smith tribute bands and their shows in the Los Angeles area, and even being part of Mariachi Manchester and looking out into the crowd, is that, and speaking to how the pantheon of sexuality that is represented within the Chicana, Chicano, Latina community of Los Angeles, is that you'll have a punk rocker, a rockabilly guy, men and women who are queer, men and women who are gay and lesbian, all represented at these shows, even to the most, you know, masculine homie or homegirl. And that is a great example of what I think LA looks like. And maybe the rest of communities as such in around the country. And so what I think the music of the Smiths and Morrissey creates somewhat of a safe space for all of these people to gather and sing these songs together. So that is something truly special and unique about this audience and fandom.
Melissa, talk to me a little bit about this next song. It's not by Morrissey or by the Smiths, but by a band called Osomatli. It's called Gay Vatos in Love, and you're about to publish a whole presentation about this song, and you lectured on it too because of the connection to Morrissey, right?
Mm-hmm. I sure did. The song is interesting for a lot of reasons, but it was written, according to Osomatli, they wrote it at the right in the middle of the Proposition 8 marriage debates, you know, the for or against gay marriage back in 2008. And it was the band's way of sort of protesting what they saw was discrimination and inequality. And for a bunch of self-identified straight guys, they felt compelled to write a song that celebrates gay love, queer love, particularly in Chicano Latino communities. And I think that's why we see the term gay vatos, right? Very specific. And, you know, the line, the more I hear Morrissey, the more I feel all right, gay vatos in love, to me that hits the nail on the head so perfectly about what Morrissey means to his fans, but particularly to the LGBT queer communities. And yet the song also acknowledges that, you know, being out is still dangerous.
This is Gay Vatos in Love by Osomatli. So in the 80s, Morrissey and the Smiths were losing popularity. So Rigo, what happened next? How did they become popular again or popular among Latinos?
Morrissey was becoming irrelevant and he got a whiff that Mexican Americans really liked him. And so then he started to wear like mariachi suits as soon as 1998. Then he started wearing like the Mexican flag and East LA t-shirts. And then he started like writing songs about them, like the song Mexico, which is one of his solo stuff, and it's about white privilege.
In Mexico, I went for a walk to inhale the tranquil, cool lover's air. But I could taste a trace of American chemical waste, and a small voice said, what can we do? Oh.
So how familiar familiar is Morrissey with how famous he is among Latinos, and how much do you feel like he's capitalizing on that?
I got that question actually after my talk, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he lived in Los Angeles for 8 years, and you know, he was alienated by the Brits. His former bandmates, the Smiths, were suing him in the high court, and that was also part of his irrelevance. You know, his 1997 album, Maladjusted, was panned by critics, and so he sort of got mopey, like he usually does, and he moved to L.A. in 1998.
What? No.
You know, he moved to, yeah, no, not Morrissey. But there was really something about moving to Los Angeles that did it, because I think there is where he relied on, in a lot of ways, the fans that are in L.A., and the fans embraced him. And I will say that probably what really announced Los Angeles as Mos Angeles was the 1999 Oye Esteban tour, because that tour was the first tour that took Morrissey to Latin America, right, to Mexico. But Morrissey, I think, is very conscious about post-colonial struggle, and I think the song Mexico is a good example of that.
I just don't see why this should be so in Mexico. I lay on the grass and I cried my heart out for want of my love. Oh, for want of my love. Oh, for want of my love. Oh.
And now I think is a great time to listen to a little bit of El Mariachi Manchester.
Yeah.
Alejandro, yay. Tell me, like, what you just decided to do a Morrissey cover band? How?
It's been a few years in the making, and this is under the mastermind of Moises E. Manchester, otherwise known as Moises Baqueiro. He's been asking me for about 3 or 4 years, like, let's start this, let's do this. Like, this would be perfect. It would make complete sense. And I've been back and forth between Washington, D.C. as a fellow at the Smithsonian. And finally, it came together in fall of 2014. And we were so scared to present this to an audience that is so devout, knows every single word to every single song, yet has the Mos Angeles has shown us so much love, and I feel truly blessed to be part of this now.
Okay, so let's listen to The First in the Gang to Die, and then I'm going to ask you a little bit about this song. So prepare yourself.
All right.
You have never been in love until you see the sunlight thrown over smashed human bones. We are the pretty petty things, and you're standing on our streets where Hector was the first of the gang with the gun in his hand, and the first to do time, the first of the gang to die. Such a silly boy,
Hector was the first of the gang with the gun in his hand and the bullet in his gullet and the first lost lad to go under the sod. And he stole from the rich and the poor and the not very rich and the very poor. And he stole our hearts away. He stole our hearts away. He stole our hearts away.
So there's like a definite imitation here of Morrissey vocals.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I think, one thing, the voice of Morrissey is so unique that when reinterpreting his music, there has to be a hint of that.
Right. Right?
There's certain isms, Morrissey-ismos, as I call him amongst the group, his phrasing. It's so unique. And I think, but the other part of it too is that we have to have that mariachi crooner voice as well. And so Moises sings most of the songs. And it's trying to find that right hybrid between what is the best of mariachi music and what is the best of Morrissey and those details and fusing the two.
We're going to end the show with a song called Every Day is Like Sunday. It's performed by Mex Russe, which is the same tribute band we started the show with. Mex Russe has played sold-out shows in Mexico and in the UK, and they're coming to the US. They're playing New York on May 10th and Los Angeles on May 11th. Guys, I want to thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. Alejandro Hernandez, he is, oh my God, you do so many things. Alejandro Hernandez is in a Morrissey tribute band called Mariachi Manchester. He's also in a band called Aparato.
Yes.
And he's working on a dissertation, right?
I finished my dissertation.
He finished his dissertation.
I'm a current postdoctoral fellow at the Smithsonian Center for Folklife and Cultural Heritage, which is why I'm here in D.C. right now.
He is here in the flesh.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Dr. Melissa Hidalgo. She's an assistant professor of English and world literature. She sometimes gives lectures on Morrissey at Claremont College. And
yes, and I actually have a book coming out next year called Mozlandia.
Mozlandia.
About these fan cultures.
Because Moz is Morrissey's nickname, right?
Yes.
Yes, it is. And so Mozlandia, Moz is everywhere.
And
I'm also in a tribute band.
You are?
A little kind of a shameless self-promotion here. Yeah, we just started. We're the all-female band, Sheila's Take a Bow. All-woman Smith's Morrissey tribute band, yes.
That's amazing. And a special thanks to our intern extraordinaire, Rigo Hernandez. You can let go of the book now. Okay, you can let go of the autobiography.
I'll take it with me. This will be my last thing I do.
Rigo is an intern here at NPR. He's graduating soon from his internship, going on to do big things. And he's also a huge, huge Morrissey fan. This show was his idea. So thank you, Rigo. Oh. Thank you so much. I want to remind our fans that you can check out every single song that you've heard on this week's show at npr.org/adlatino, and make sure to write in and tell us your Morrissey stories. You know, what are your anecdotes of falling in love with the Maz? You can write us at our Twitter and our Facebook page. We are NPR's Ad Latino. I am Jasmine Garst. Felix Contreras was out today, but he's going to be with us next week, and we'll fill him in on all the fun we had without him.
Love you, Felix.
This has been Alt Latino.